Welcome back to Tangential Banter. My name is Ben Mowell. Here's my co-host, Jack Korzenowski.
Hey.
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 So today we are about to embark on maybe some mini topics. We'll change of pace, cover some things that probably won't take a full episode. And the first one on the docket is that the Beatles are musically overrated.
So this is a topic that I'm gonna have to let Ben do most of the talking because I really don't know the Beatles music almost at all.
Yeah, and I'll admit this is more of a personal vendetta is the wrong word, but I don't know. I'm not a fan of their music, so I'd like to argue that it's overrated to make myself feel better about my opinion. I have discussed this with a number of people, and I think most who aren't diehard Beatles fans agree that there is an element of truth, in my opinion, which is largely that their music really was more of a cultural phenomenon of the time. The British invasion sort of thing, which obviously was in part because of their music. And there, it has been pointed out to me, are a number of Beatles songs that are timeless classics that, the lyrics are beautiful and blah, blah, blah. So part of it is just the era, I think, in which you grew up and maybe started listening to the Beatles or how you're exposed to them. But anyway, so my argument is that their cultural impact has been far more significant than their musical impact over
Yeah.
time.
Well, they were only together for like 10 years, right?
Yeah, still a pretty long time.
I don't think so. Like, I mean, that
Well,
was from,
if you look at like the big bands of the era
I mean,
that.
like from their start to like when they were like all in like what suits and had like the shorter hair to like
Yeah.
their extreme hippie drug-induced days. Like all of that was a span of 10 years. Was which I mean that's pretty short. I mean, think about it, because it's 2019 now. If somebody started doing this like when we were in college.
Yeah.
And that, like, very start, and then they're already done,
Yeah.
and then it still had that giant impact. It's like
Yeah.
Hendrix almost. Hendrix was even shorter.
The other thing is that obviously, I think musical taste or musical preference is very dependent on the era in which you grew up, right? I think people tend to enjoy the music most that makes them feel like when they were in that, teenage era, kind of coming of age, gaining some independence from your parents. So you re that kind of music resonates most with you. And I think for a lot of people, the Beatles, they were that band of their era, right? But yeah, I don't know. There's a lot of other things I'd rather listen to.
Again, I just haven't really listened to them so much to be able to say, oh yeah, these guys are overrated or not. But now people just go freaking nuts for them.
Yeah. I honestly, the songs of theirs I enjoy probably the most are the more like whimsical, like Yellow Submarine or 8 Days a Week, something like that.
I don't even know 8 days a week.
Well,
I know of
you could
Yellow
check it out.
Submarine. Yellow Submarine. Yellow Submarine.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah. The other thing that's hard for me is I don't, I mean, so many songs of that era are like subliminally charged with drug references that I don't get. So I'm like, oh, that's an interesting song. And then someone's like, did you know that was about cocaine? And I'm like, oh, that's
And to
good to
me, it's
know.
just like, really, is that it? Like, is that all it's about? It seems so just flat to me. Like,
Yeah.
oh, let's make a cool
It's
song
a drug trip. Yeah.
about drugs. It's just like,
We've seen the sky with
is that
diamonds.
it? Like, is
Yeah.
that the extent of it to drugs? Because it's
Yeah.
not only just unrelatable to me because I don't do hard drugs. Like I said, I don't do drugs at all. But
Ha!
well,
Sugar, coffee. Suck it, Jack.
I had a friend who's a vegan say, oh, coffee's bad for you, it's a drug. And then in the same breath, he'll say, don't eat meat, man, eat this vegan burger, it's plant-based. So it's just like, well, plant-based is apparently not good enough, considering that caffeine's bad and that's all plant-based.
Yeah.
Or sugar. I don't think he's against sugar.
Asukar.
But yeah, I'll have to talk, I'm meet up with him tomorrow, so I'll have to talk to him about that.
So, yeah, that was all I really was going to throw out there about the Beatles.
But I agree with the whole drug references. Like, oh, that song's all about drugs, or like, what's the song about weed, the dragon one?
Puff the
Charlie
Magic
and Puff
Dragon.
the Mad Dragon. Yeah, it's just like, it's obviously a reference about drugs, but a lot of songs, and I think I'm gonna sound like a total snob here, but the reason why I like a lot of the songs that I do is because it's about deeper stuff, or at least makes you think. Or at least
what?
Well, this is not a good example, but have you ever heard of the guy named Warren Zevon?
Can't say that I have.
You ever heard of the song "Poor, Poor, Pitiful Me"? Pitiful Me. That's Warren Zevon. So he has another song called "Excitable Boy," and it's this very happy-go-lucky, upbeat song, but it's about a guy who's an absolute psychopath and is just doing all this nuts and just deranged things.
Yeah.
But all the while, the song, like, if you're not listening to the song, it's like very happy and upbeat.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's like this very conflicting. Mm. And I like those songs that conflict too, because there's a few songs that I know that are like, if you listen to the lyrics, they're like, this is a sad song. But like it's like in a major key, it sounds really happy, which I think really speaks to the whole, like, you can look good on the outside, but on the inside, if you dig a little deeper, you realize that this is a sad person.
I think that a lot with like Owl City songs. I
have not listened to Owl City, but I've heard good things about him.
He's actually from Minnesota.
I've heard that.
Owatonna. Yes. Yeah. And Christian, FYI. Huh? Anyway, so Adam Young is the musician behind Owl City, or the lyricist, singer. And a lot of the songs are very upbeat and like peppy in their sound.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't say necessarily depressed.
But when you listen
to you listen to the lyrics, they're definitely sadder than you expect from the sound of the song. Yeah. So, yeah, that's an interesting dynamic too.
I like songs that make you think. And I think a lot of those drug reference songs are like, oh, it's make you think, but then they just say, oh, it's about drugs, and that's it. Nothing deeper, nothing cooler. Yeah. It's a disappointment when that's what I learn.
Yeah. So, abrupt change of topic in this mini-series.
Mm.
We were talking about fun engineering units.
Oh, yeah.
So there've been a lot. I mean, in the history of the world, there are a lot of different ways to measure things and to track increments.
Yep.
Such
as the cubit.
The cubit, yeah. An old-fashioned term for distance, measuring a distance, which was defined from the tip of your middle finger to the bottom of your elbow, which is about 18 inches. And I know there are varying definitions of a cubit, anywhere from, I think 16 inches was a short cubit to like 24 inches was like the royal Egyptian cubit or something, maybe even up to 30 inches, but they're in that foot and a half to 2 foot range. But yeah, so there's a lot of other ones. There's, so like the term knots came from measuring, you know, how rapidly a rope was playing out basically from the back end of a boat.
Yep.
How many knots had passed. What's the term, fathoms, like measuring depths from a boat.
I'm looking up weird engineering units, and a fathom is 18 handbreadths.
18 handbreadths. Which probably came because you would drop the rope and then you would be pulling it back in
hand over hand.
So you could count how many times your hands went past each other. So there's fathoms. Then back in the old surveying days, they had rods and chains.
Yeah.
So a chain, I think, was 66 feet in length. And a rod, I believe, is 6 feet. So all these old-timey ways to measure things.
I love it, man.
Butts is one that...
Oh, butts, my favorite. My favorite unit. And it's not even...
Like, I just like the way that you said that.
It's not even like B-U-H-T or B-U-T-T-E. No, it's butt. B-U-T-T. And it's a unit of volume.
Yeah.
It's between... Because it was during the time where standardization of units was non-existent.
Yeah.
So the reports I've seen are it's like between 120 and 130 gallons. And it was mainly used for measuring alcoholic volume, volume of alcoholic beverages. Or, you know, like...
So it was a couple of barrels.
So it was literally... I mean, like, we're talking about, like, if you had, like, two butts of wine, that's, like, 240 to 260 gallons of wine or beer or whatever. So it's just...
in, a lot.
So my buds and I always joke about using the butt as a base of the base unit of a new system of units. And for two reasons. One, it's a butt, right? It's just funny. Yeah, yeah. And two, it's so impractically big that everyday items would be like
millibutts.
Yeah, it would be don't forget to drink 0.000138 butts of water every day. You know, like this really.
Yeah. Or it's just becomes an impracticality.
Or like when you go buy gas, you know, it's if it were $2.50 a gallon and 120 gallons, so that's 120, 240, that's $300 a butt.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, you go to a gas station, $280 a butt, that's pretty cheap, you know, it's because yeah. And you only buy like a 20th of a butt at a time, maybe as much as like 0.08 butts at a time. With a normal vehicle, it's just like it's so practically big.
How does a butt compare to a hogshead in size?
How much is a hogshead?
I have no idea. I know the term hogshead is used.
Hogshead unit of unit measurement. A hogshead of wine, so it's also used for liquor, came to be 63 U.S. gallons. So I guess it's half a butt. Oh, wait, I think that, yeah, there's a, so there's a, apparently there's a ton.
Which is like the biggest?
A T-U-N, ooh. Not to be confused with a T-O-N.
I was thinking it was T-O-N-N-E, the old ton.
Ton. So here's how it breaks out. So so the units are from smallest to biggest, rundlet, barrel, tierce, hogshead, bunchen, butt, and ton. And it goes... A rundlet is 1/14 of a ton. A barrel is 1/8 of a ton. So just going from a rundlet to a barrel is not an easy conversion. A rundlet is 8/14 of the next size up. Gosh, I love this system. Then you have a tierce, which is 1/6 of a ton, which again, does not divide, does not have an even number of barrels or rundlets in it. Then you have a hogshead, which is 1/4 of a ton. So a hogshead is 2 barrels.
Yeah.
Then you have a
2
puncheon. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right.
Okay.
Which is 1/3 of a ton. So a puncheon is 2 tierces. Then you have a butt, which is 2 hogsheads. And then you have a ton, which is 2 butts.
So a ton is how many gallons?
That'd be like 260.
Which is interesting because the density of alcohol would be slightly less than density of water, which is about 8 pounds per gallon. So that would put you right at about 2,000 pounds.
Would it? So say that again. So 8 pounds a gallon for water?
Yeah.
And then if you have 260 gallons, yeah, it's 2,080 pounds.
Right. And the density of alcohol is slightly less than water.
So that probably would.
So a ton of alcohol would weigh pretty much a ton, T-O-N.
Yeah. But yeah, you spell them differently. I just love this. Ties into the whole, the metric system is boring because all of these units we're talking about are pretty much they're English or they're old English system.
Yeah.
And like the metric system, having been invented by a bunch of boring engineers, doesn't have any of this.
Hey, don't blame this on engineers. There are a lot of scientists involved.
Yeah, there are boring scientists.
Yeah. So what other fun units are there? So we've talked time based units like a fortnight.
Yeah, fortnights are awesome.
Yeah.
The term fortnightly for biweekly.
Fortnightly.
Yeah, which I like.
I think it's also fun to extrapolate these into more complex measurements. So, for example, velocity is measured as a distance over time.
Yeah.
So in miles per hour, kilometers per hour are the most ones we're most common, we're most familiar with.
Yeah.
But then that could rapidly change or be converted into more interesting things like chains per fortnight.
Yes, chains per fortnight. Gosh, we have to start using that. How much would that be? So hold on. So a chain is how many feet?
66 feet.
So
I believe.
You do. So
it's not very fast. In fact, it's very, very slow.
166. So this and then times how many hours? So they're in a fortnight. Is
there's 168 times
2. What is that? 336. Hold on.
Yeah, 336 hours in a fortnight.
So to convert from feet per second to, or excuse me, feet per hour to chains per fortnight. I think you have to, it looks like you have to scale it by 5.1.
Well, what I would do is convert chains per fortnight into miles per hour, because that's something we understand better.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to do. So let's look this up. Chains per fortnight. Wow, it's not coming up. Imagine that. Miles per hour.
So it's gonna be.
Oh, they actually have it. So holy.
What does it say?
26,880 chains per fortnight equates to 1 mile per hour. So going 60 so go the miles other way an around. Hour.
Yeah, it's how many chains per fortnight.
1.613 times 10 to the 6 chains per fortnight.
So basically 1.6 million chains per fortnight.
Yes. So you could say.
That's 1 mile per hour?
No. That's 60. So 60 miles per hour is 1.6 mega chains per fortnight.
There we go. You heard it here first.
Folks. Yes, mega chains per fortnight.
In our acts of civil disobedience, we should go around putting up new speed limit signs that are 1.6 million mega or 1.6 mega chains per fortnight.
No, 1.6 million chains per fortnight. And I don't want to use the mega sub prefix because that
ties into the boring part.
So what it should be is just 1.6 times 10 to the 6 chains per fortnight.
Now, even engineering notation is boring because you don't get to write out all the zeros. So
okay, so 1.613000 chains per fortnight.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh, I just love... Well, wait, how much is a league?
Oh, a league is like 120 miles or... No, that's not right.
Is it 20 miles? Leagues per fortnight. So this is a bit more manageable. It's about 1 mile an hour. Well, 1 mile an hour equals 97.3 leagues per fortnight.
But how much is a league in miles?
A league. Let's see. Da, 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 how many miles in a league? Oh, 3.45. Wait, how many nautical miles in a league?
Three.
That's the week. Yep. So league is 3 nautical miles. So a league is to a nautical mile as a yard is to a foot.
Think now that's a comparison that doesn't get drawn every day.
Yard, yeah. Man, just love these units. They're so fun to work with, and I think we should implement them more. Butts for volume. Then it should go leagues to miles, feet, and...
What if... No, because a league is 3 nautical miles. A chain is longer than a foot or yard. What if we went chains? So if it was leagues and then chains was the smaller unit.
What about furlongs?
Yeah.
For how much is a furlong again? Furlong is 2.01.168 meters. I don't know if... Oh, an eighth of a mile is a furlong. There we go.
Not for long.
Ah!
What are some other... So this one I think is fun is that... So torque.
Yep.
You can measure in foot-pounds or newton meters.
Yeah.
And I don't remember, this is a couple of years ago, I was doing a calculation at work, and it never dawned on me before, and I don't know why, but I realized that you could convert 1-to-1 for newton meters to... Is it kilojoules? I think.
Yeah.
I think it's kilojoules. Yeah.
Well, now I was actually going to bring this up. I want to stop real quick. There's a difference between newton meters of torque. Well, excuse me, foot pounds of torque and foot pounds of work.
Yeah. But
anyway, keep going on. I just wanted to talk on that for a little bit.
Well, all I was going to say is that you could. Sorry, and it was between a newton meter and a joule. So you end up with, for example, if you've got a 5 kilonewton meter torque sensor,
yeah,
you could just say you need a 5 kilojoule torque sensor, right? Because Newton meters are the traditional unit of torque, but you could give an equivalent unit, say that you needed to measure torque.
See, you don't understand the fundamentals of what's going on, because a newton meter of torque is not the same as a newton meter of work. You can exert a newton meter of work, a joule of work, without exerting any, by exerting 0 newton meters of torque, and then
No,
vice versa.
yes, sure. I'm not disagreeing.
Okay.
But you could apply,
Oh, the same concept?
well, you could use 5 kilojoules of energy to apply 5 kilonewton meters of torque.
No, that conversion doesn't make sense. No, it doesn't. The two aren't tied. They have on paper their units look the same, but they're unrelated. They're unrelated. And the reason why, and this is going to be one of the things that our listeners can't tell, but newton meters of torque is you have a radius, which is your meter, your length, and you have your torque being applied at a cross angle, and then that creates a twisting force. Whereas a newton meter of work is they're both the force is being applied by that distance and is exerting work. And they're two different things, two different quantities that
Yeah,
happen.
but
The way that we measure torque happen to have the same, and the way that we measure work, both of which are kind of weird, or they're simplistic, but
I'm
because of
saying if you
that.
take the amount of energy to do 5 kilonewton meters or 5 kilojoules of work
Yeah.
and apply it transversely, it doesn't give you the same result.
Well, no, it depends on your one. You can't apply energy at a lever. It doesn't make sense. You do work with that energy. So you can, for example, if you can have a newton meter of work. Why are we talking metric units? You have a foot pound of work,
I'm
right?
talking metric units because they end up being the same unit, right? So you
Well,
can
so
interchange them.
foot pounds of torque and foot pounds of work. Work in the English system is measured in foot pounds.
Yeah, but we don't normally talk about for pounds of work, right?
Well, if you're talking about work in the standard system, you do. I've never heard any other unit except for maybe BTUs. Now, what I thought you were going to get to is if you're going to do the newton meters of torque, well, why don't we just call it a so many joule torque sensor? Like instead of 5 kilonewton torque sensor, why not call it a 5 kilojoule? That's kind of funny. No, you want to know what sounds even weirder? Instead of a 5,000 foot pound torque sensor, you have a 5,000 BTU torque sensor,
I mean,
which I
that's
think is
essentially
an
what I'm
even.
getting at.
That's an even funnier conversion, I think, because it's like, where's the thermal coming in? And British? Like, what's going on here?
I've heard.
How much torque can this sensor take? 5,000 British thermal units.
I have heard BTUs used in very surprising circumstances. I can't think of where it is off the top of my
I would
head.
imagine it was as a mechanical work, which is
It
still
might be.
technically true. It's
Yeah.
just a very, it's an awkward. That's not what the BTU is. So the numbers, the quantities don't won't really be rel won't be relatable, but
Yeah.
it's still legitimate. I can't remember how a
So yeah.
BTU is how that's Yeah, English has a very does not have a very good way of measuring a very good unit for energy. They have foot pounds, just as metric has newton meters, but they just in the metric system say, you know what, we need a standalone unit for energy. Even if we just define it as 1 newton dot product 1 meter. So it's very simple. It's almost an unnecessary step, but I think they do it just to say, no, we have a dedicated unit for energy, which is the joule. English system doesn't have that. They have BTUs, which is a unit for energy, but it's specifically applied for thermal energy only, usually. It would be weird to say, I pushed this heavy box across this frictioned floor, or I was carrying a box up
No,
the
we always
stairs.
neglect friction.
I carried this cargo up this flight of stairs. I performed so many BTUs of work. You can do that. It's not what the BTU is designed or intended to reflect, but you can. It's just weird because again, it's like how do you do a thermal unit of work?
But you could actually,
Of mechanical work.
you could in some ways measure that because the heat rejection of your body induced by doing that work would, your temperature would rise, right?
The inefficiencies would rise or the amount of heat that you gave off,
Right.
extra heat you gave off. Yeah,
Right.
you measure that in
Because you had,
BTUs.
yeah, you
That
had
would be
to.
that wouldn't be the same BTU measurement of the work you did. That'd be in
No,
addition
no.
to, but yeah.
Right.
But yeah, you could. That's one of the weaknesses of the standard system is they don't have a very good unit for energy.
The where I wanted to go eventually,
or
though,
work.
Is
Work.
using
Work and
using
energy are kind of two different. They're conceptually different, kind of. Anyway, keep going. Sorry, I need to get that off my chest.
It was looking very awkward on your chest, so I'm glad you got it off there.
I did it for you, buddy.
The point being made, I was going to make, though, is that it would be a lot of fun to take these kind of very diverse, weird, archaic engineering units and then use them, convert all of your, like if you were writing an engineering report and you submit it with, you know, we're going to set the speed limit on this stretch of road at 1.6 million chains per fortnight. Like that's your proposal to the city of Cedar Falls. They're like, what the heck is going
on?
Oh,
I have a few of my buds to get a kick out of this conversation. Yeah, let's, okay, I have an idea. You and me, let's sit down. What are some quantities that we could come up with funny units? So,
well, there's, you can measure radiation in bananas, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's funny. I like that. Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. So radiation, we just measure it in bananas.
Yeah.
How many bananas of radiation? Okay, I like that. What about, so weight?
Slugs?
Yep, slugs. I agree. No, slugs,
slugs
is mass.
Mass, yeah.
What we could do, so
weight
what,
you could do is...
you could do like hogsheads of water or something, but I don't know. How about...
what's a less common weight unit?
Grains. Which
grains?
Is like what gunpowder is measured in.
But that's not a weight.
Yeah, it is.
It is?
Yeah.
I thought those were actual grains of gunpowder.
No, it's a weight of gunpowder. Grains. I'll look it up. It's like so many grains in an ounce, I think.
Hmm.
Grain unit of measurement. A grain is equal to 0.065 gram or 1/7000th of a pound.
Hmm.
It was probably based off of grains of something, but it's a...
Oh.
It's an official unit.
You could also measure distances in hands, like
hands.
Horses.
Oh, yeah.
Horses measured in hands.
What is the, is it just like a hand breadth?
I think it's 4 inches, which was originally a hand breadth.
Hand breadth. Okay. So, or fathoms, excuse me, fathoms, which is 18 hand breadths, which I like.
So one fathom would be a really tall horse.
Yeah. Agreed.
Because I think... I don't remember where the distinction is broken down between horse and pony. It's like...
Is it just size?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
I'm pretty sure.
Oh.
Yeah. And it's somewhere between like 11 and 13 hands, I think.
Okay.
But like a 15-hand horse would be
big.
Really big.
Yeah.
So fathom at 18 would be ginormous.
Yep.
I don't even know if draft horses get that big, but... I think we got to find a better unit of weight out there, though.
The grain. All right, let's skip it for now.
Although the grains is appropriately at the, like, it's best to choose a unit that's at the far end of its own scale.
Yes.
Like the extreme end, so that everything has to be some awkward amount,
yeah,
either
so
larger
to,
or smaller.
To put in perspective, if you weighed 100 pounds and if a grain were 1/7000th of a pound, you would, 100 pound person, which is not a heavy person, that is a lightweight person,
700,000
would weigh 700,000 grains.
Hmm.
700 kilograins.
So take that.
We need to also come up with a different,
we talked about volume, we talked about distance, we talked about weight.
Volume's obviously the butt. Distance should be, do we settle on leagues as the longest distance one?
I mean, you could.
Then time should be fortnight. Now, here's the thing. I think coming up with the base unit for all of these is well and good. But one, the nice thing about the English system is it doesn't have a standard unit for a given quantity, right?
Sure.
Between the inch, the foot, the yard, the mile, there's no standard. It's just like, which one do you want to use?
Right. You're like choosing a different measure. Yeah.
Whereas in the metric system, they have the meter, then they have the decimeter, centimeter, millimeter, and then going the other way, decameter, centimeter, kilometer, yada yada. So the meter is the base, the gram is the base, the newton is the base. Go, you know, keep on going. Don't have that
yeah,
in the
yeah.
standard system. So even if we,
so for the, I would say a league shouldn't be, or the fortnight,
yeah,
shouldn't be our largest unit. We should also have leap years should be a unit.
So that'd be every 4 years?
Yeah.
So leap year, then boil it down to year.
Leap years, sesquicentennials, which is 150 years. I just so, like the word sesquicentennials.
It's so impractical. I love it.
Because so, four doesn't go into 150.
Yeah. Oh, man. And this is such a big jump because I think we still have to have the year. Maybe you don't.
No, no years.
No years. So years. Do we go straight from Fortnite to leap years? And I like how
Fortnite's leap years.
I like how it's just called like leap year. It's not even just called, like, you know what I mean? It's like, well, the word year is in there. Why not just still use the year?
You're not allowed.
No. Yeah. Oh, man. So Fortnite, then what comes next after Fortnite?
Going down the scale?
Yeah.
So sesquicentennial will be our largest time measurement.
Then leap year.
Then leap year. Then Fortnite. And then...
So here's what we could do. We could...
Shakes? Is that too small?
What's a shakes?
It's like 3 milliseconds or something. It's used in atomic measurements. I don't know if it really is, but what I've heard it uses for atomic measurements, it's based on the phrase shakes of a lamb's tail.
Shakes. I like it.
Tom Clancy writes about it in some of his books.
Really?
Yeah.
In what context? In
like... Because they were building some dirty bomb, and it was like, oh, 3 shakes later, the detonator hit the whatever. Like,
okay. Yeah, calm down, buddy. Yeah, so we need a...
So a time unit that's less than 2 weeks, more than a second.
Yeah, and it needs to be
something that we're not familiar with
right now. Yeah, something awkward. I'm trying to think. There's lunar months, but that's going the opposite way.
Yeah. So if you listeners are out there and you can think of a unit of time between a second and a fortnight, open suggestions.
Planck time, second, hour, minute, day, month. Week, century, decade, millennium, millisecond, leap year, fortnight, microsecond, Julian year, nanosecond, tropical year, sidereal year, Jiffy, lustrum.
What's a Jiffy?
Let me look up the Wikipedia
page. If a Jiffy's like 15 minutes, that would be perfect.
Scientific units of time interrelated? Oh. Scientific time units. The Svedberg is a time unit used for sedimentation rates, usually of proteins. It is defined as 10 to the minus 13 seconds. Dang.
That's very small.
Yes.
Also, I thought of another distance unit. We should use angstroms.
Ah, yes. I agree with that. Here we go. Okay, Wikipedia does have a more complete. I have a more complete list, including some weird ones.
Are they sorted in alphabetical order?
They're not. I'm just trying to see.
They should be sorted in equivalent minutes or seconds or hours or something.
Leap year. Trying to think if there's any good. I'm trying to find. Oh, these are listed in order of length. So hold on, I didn't realize that at first. So a Jiffy is 3 × 10⁻²⁴ seconds. That's pretty quick. The amount of time light takes to travel 1 Fermi, about the size of a nucleon, in a vacuum. Wow, that's not very long. Let's see. Shake is 10 to the minus 8 seconds, 10 nanoseconds. So it's just a millisecond.
No.
It's a microsecond. No, it's
10 nanoseconds. 0.100 nanoseconds would be,
A thousand would be micro. So it's a hundredth of a microsecond. It's a centimicrosecond.
It's a percent of a microsecond.
Yes. You're right. That's a shake. Let's see. A moment is 1/40th of an hour.
Second and a half. Oh, no.
So 90 seconds. Medieval unit of time used by astronomers to compute astronomical movements. Oh! I don't know how to pronounce it. It's called a key. It's spelled K-E.
A K.
A K. That's 14 minutes and 24 seconds. Ooh, I like it because it's not even a full. It's not even a break at a full minute there.
We're adding it in.
Usually calculated as 15 minutes, similar to quarter, as in a quarter past six. I'm going to look this guy up. Traditional Chinese timekeeping.
Now we're talking.
The traditional. Oh, so it's a Chinese system. Okay. Ooh, the Chinese system's even weirder than the. English system.
Wow, that's baseless and rude.
No.
From your perspective, it's weird.
Okay. So we got the K, maybe it's called. I don't know. I don't like it because it's from another system that isn't standard, that isn't English. Whatever.
I like it because it falls right in that time range I was looking for, right about 15 minutes.
Sure, okay. And then that's it. There's nothing smaller than that.
Yeah, no.
Nope. So it's like, oh, he finished the race with only 0.00015K
margin of victory.
Yeah, or something. Yeah, some stupid small.
All right, I feel like we milked that one.
Yeah, I think we're slowing down on this topic. So we're just bantering tangentially at this point. Wait.
What?
I don't know. That's the name of the podcast. Anyway. So, what was the next topic you want to talk about, Ben?
The next and final topic for this podcast, malapropisms.
Malapropisms, that's right. Ben, can you, while I get this list up, can you explain to our dear listeners what a malapropism is?
So, a malapropism is usually a word, sometimes a phrase, being used incorrectly, where the user does not realize that they're using it incorrectly. So, they can be used, you could use it... to imply like sarcasm or humor, like some sense of irony, right? Where you're intentionally misusing it. But that's like not typically the case.
Like what they did in Rugrats. You remember watching Rugrats?
I didn't watch that growing up.
Oh, you didn't?
Well, we didn't have a TV for a while, a long time.
So they Rugrats, do you know what the show is?
Yeah, I know what the show
so,
is.
So because they're so small, they'll say things you know, that adults say but get it completely wrong. Like they have a lot of malapropisms, and one of them is it's the moment of tooth for instead of moment of truth.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
I think I remember like where they said Pacific instead of specific. Things like that.
I've heard that in meetings before.
In meetings, yeah.
Someone.
Was it multiple times or was it like...
Yes.
Ah, that's bad.
Yeah, there's one person in particular that uses them often. So, like we were talking about, it is interesting the way that the brain learns and processes words and stores them and retrieves them from memory. So that all plays a role. One I know I've talked about with someone in the past at work was the phrase could care less versus couldn't care less. Because a lot of people will say, I could care less.
Yeah.
But the intent of the phrase is to mean there's no more care to be given, right? So if you could care less, that means you care a little bit. There's some care left that you could get rid of and care less.
I agree.
I couldn't care less means, to quote the song, my given name is busted. And there's no more care to be given. So you couldn't care less.
What song was that?
That's a country song. I can't remember the singer.
Anyway. So. Yeah.
So that one's frequently misused. We talk about Pacific, specific.
Yep.
There's the classic... It's a doggy dog world.
You say that's a classic. I have not heard anybody say that. And I can't believe anybody would. It's a doggy dog world.
I've seen it. It's like screenshots of Facebook comments where people say things they don't mean or don't understand. Yeah. It's a doggy dog world. So dog eat dog.
Speaking of typos, like typing malapropisms, have you seen that meme where it's a bunch of like ladies saying, oh, I love what my man wears his colon. I love his smell on my man's colon instead of cologne.
So if you haven't seen this, you should try to find it because it's hysterical.
Be careful what you search for.
Just be careful. But it's people who are trying to say cologne, which is a French word spelled C-O-L-O-G-N-E. The G's before the N. Yeah. And versus the word colon, C-O-L-O-N.
Yeah.
Which obviously is not cologne.
And nor does it smell good.
Nor does it smell good. That's where the irony comes in.
Yes.
It smells the opposite of what you want. So it's like, yeah, then there's, it's all these women raving about how good colon smells.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
I love it when you can smell a man's colon before you can see him.
Yeah. It's, yeah. Oh, it's so good.
So if you want to talk about cologne, please, please learn how to spell cologne.
For, yes.
Actually, no, don't.
Yeah.
Because it's funnier if you don't.
And we can laugh at you.
Yeah. But we will be laughing at you.
Yeah, definitely. Don't worry. We're not laughing with you. We're laughing at you.
Yeah. So other malapropisms. You had a list of some.
Yeah, so these were actual malapropisms said, like, by, for some reason, they didn't just say common ones. It was ones used by, like, kind of, like, politicians and stuff like that, kind of higher-ups.
Oh, yeah. There was George Bush had the strategery.
Strategery, yes.
I mean, that's kind of a made-up word. I guess that technically falls under malapropism.
So I'll just start reading the Wikipedia page under the subsection real-life examples. Malapropisms do not occur only as intentional comedic literary devices. They also occur as a kind of speech error in ordinary speech. Examples are often quoted in the media. Welsh conservative leader Andrew Davies encouraged the Conservative Party conference to make breakfast instead of Brexit a success. Bertie R. Ahern, former Taoiseach of Ireland, no idea what that means or if I pronounce it right, warned his country against upsetting the apple tart instead of apple cart of his country's economic success. Former Chicago Mayor Richard J. Daley referred to a tandem bicycle as a tantrum bicycle and made mention of Alcoholics Unanimous. Former Australian Prime Minister Tony Abbott once claimed that no one is the suppository of all wisdom, i.e. repository or depository. Similarly, as reported in New Scientist, an office worker had described a colleague as a vast suppository of information. The worker then apologized for his mismarpleism, i.e. malapropism. New Scientist noted that this is possibly the first time anyone had uttered a malapropism for the word malapropism itself.
Isn't there actually a Miss Marple something?
Yes, there was.
What was that?
I came across it in my reading for this topic, but I couldn't really distinguish what it was.
That's funny, though. So it's basically this process where your brain takes something that sounds similar.
Yeah.
And just drops it in place of the word that you should be using.
For all intensive purposes is a common one. The real phrase is for all intents and purposes, which makes more sense because it's the purpose of this. It's my intent to do this.
Right.
They're kind of the same thing.
It's saying the same, all intents and purposes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Another one is...
the one that got me in college, I had people who argued with me about this. About whether the phrase is a bold-faced lie or a bald-faced lie.
Oh, did you ever find out which one it was?
Well, I've always heard it said and believe it to be a bald-faced lie.
Okay.
And the people I was arguing with said it was a bold-faced. So what I read was that the origin of it is from people who didn't have facial hair, being bald-faced, were considered to be better or more practiced liars. Because they didn't have to hide their facial expressions behind a beard. Mm. So if you had a full beard, you could be less skilled at telling lies and get away with it because it was harder for people to read your expressions.
I see.
Versus someone with a bald face. So like, you know, used car salesman kind of thing.
Yeah, look, I'm on Merriam-Webster. It looks like the bald face is beautiful. Oh, and then in the late 20th century, the term bold-faced, less commonly bold, got into the same. Since the late 16th century, back when barefaced was first describing beardless folks, the word had meant bold in manner or conduct or impudent as a word used to describe brazenly rude types. But in the second half of the 20th century, the word began to modify lie as well as liar. Bold-faced became first.
Yeah.
Bald. I had another one. So there's all intents and purposes. Do you have one on top of your head to burn the It's one that irks me a lot too.
No, I was just going to go back to it is kind of fascinating how your brain creates those situations. Yeah. You know, because so there's a couple scenarios. The one that I always feel like the person they don't know the word that they're trying to put in there, right? Like they don't even realize that it's the wrong word. Their brain is just like, oh, sounds right. Drop it in there.
Yep.
And so I don't know if it's a situation where they don't know the word that's missing or if their brain just confuses them. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Like if they misspeak?
Yeah. Because I'd be curious, like, if someone says...
the real test would be to have them write it out.
Well, okay, so like, specific versus pacific.
Yeah.
Like, I would think most people know what both of those words are.
Yeah.
But if they say pacifically, their brain is just going, boop, sounds the same, stick it in there.
Yeah. Yes, I mean, I think if you have them write it down.
But there definitely are some scenarios where they don't know...
The word. Yeah, like, one that I just looked it up, I just found it, and I was surprised. It's not spitting image of somebody, it's spit and image.
Oh, really?
Apparently, yeah.
So spitting image is wrong.
Yeah, it's spit, he's a real spit, it's not spitting image, it's spitting image. Like spit and image, which I'm surprised at.
Interesting.
I don't understand what either of those phrases mean.
I think a lot of these originate in the fact that we don't usually see them written down.
Yeah.
So you hear it.
Yep.
And you interpret it as what you heard in the context of what you know. So you, for example, spitting image versus spitting image. So if you said, he's a spitting image.
Yeah.
Well, spitting is heard to be an abbreviation of spitting. Right? So then you go, oh, he said spitting image. But yeah. He really said spit and image very
quickly. Yeah.
Spitting image. I think that's how a lot of them originate. And then those just start circulating.
Then when they do write it down wrong.
Right. It's like a telephone game.
Yeah.
Basically over and over again.
Because I was going to ask, you know, why would they use it if they don't know what the actual word is? And like, are they just trying to sound fancy? Or are they trying to make themselves sound smart? That's what I was thinking at first. But you're right. If they hear it wrong, they get fixated and then they just misinterpret what they heard, which is very easy to do for a lot of these.
Well, it happens a lot with song lyrics, right? You'll sing a song and you're like, oh yeah, I know that song. And you start singing it, and somebody's like, that's not the words. Like, what are you talking about? And you go look them up and you're like, oh.
I guess I hear that now, but that's not what I thought it was. Right. Yeah. No, that's true. So I think you're right. I think it's just, I was kind of being mean to them, but I think your stance of it's just, they hear it wrong. They never see it written down and they just assume what was said, which I mean, a lot of, like spit and image, it's hard to distinguish that as spit and image as opposed to spitting image,
right?
In speech, same thing with intents and purpose. There's no phenom at the end of if you say it right, intents.
Well, but then there's also we assume like someone says intents and purposes, you think, oh, maybe they just mispronounced it, they meant intensive purposes, right? A lot of miscommunication going on.
Well, I'm saying like if you start off the bat not knowing the phrase and you hear intents and purposes, why would you think that's intensive purposes rather than intense and purposes? Because there's no V. That extra V isn't
there.
That V isn't in there. I don't know. Not extra, but.
Well, I mean, that's like what... The doggy dog world. It's like, what is a doggy dog world? What do you think that means?
I can understand that one audibly because because dog e, you really could be saying doggy or dog followed by the first part of the word eat. But then the problem is eat ends with a T and then the next word starts with a D. And those two phenoms, the only difference between them, duh. Is that what they're both the same mouth. So I've looked up, you know, how letters and stuff differ from one another, like in speech.
Yeah.
Throughout my life, every now and then. And D and T are very similar.
Yeah.
The D is unaspirated and voiced, and the T is aspirated and unvoiced, but the actual motions you do with your mouth are the same. So one of them, for D, you don't get that little puff. You don't get that
t. Right.
But you, and you do use your vocal cords.
Duh. D.
For T, you do the opposite. You do have that little puff, but you don't use your vocal cords. So it's t. But otherwise, your mouth and your tongue and your lips are all doing the same thing between the two. It's a matter of what's going on with like your lungs and your throat at that point. So point being, why did I describe all that? Is when you're saying it really fast, there isn't enough distinction between them to really be able to distinguish them.
Sure.
Even you may actually be saying dog eat og world, even if you're trying to say dog eat dog, because you really have to.
Yeah.
Because like you're saying that you're making the same sound or almost the same phenom. You're making the same motions with your mouth that you have to do it twice. But then one of them, you have to remember, use your vocal cords, but don't have the puff. And then the first one, you have to say, okay, use the puff, but don't use your vocal cords. So you have to make like these two very repetitive motions
that are slightly different. I do have to think about the sound that my mouth makes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's, when you don't do that, when you're talking fast, it's easy to mash them together, which is why dog eat dog world and dog eat dog world actually sound the same.
Yes. And this is where I feel like those phrases, they spend so much time trying to remember what they heard or figure out what they heard. They're not thinking about the context of it.
Yes. Right.
Because a dog eat dog world means it's really rough out there. Like everybody's for themselves. You have dogs that are eating other dogs because there's so little to survive. Right.
Yeah.
Versus a doggy dog world.
Which sounds awesome.
Which, yes.
I want a doggy dog world.
Doggy dog. It's a doggy dog world.
There's a bunch of dogs running around.
Yeah. Snoop doggy dog.
Or is it Snoop dog eat dog?
Maybe it is. I don't know.
Was he trying to say that he eats dogs, Ben?
Yeah, probably. Anyway, I think a lot of the context that would help you interpret a phrase is usually lost in the situation, and that's how you end up.
And those phrases are often can often be so kind of quirky or weird that it's hard to translate what they're supposed to say, what they're supposed to be, given the context.
And when you have a phrase as weird as, like, it's raining cats and dogs.
Yeah.
It's not surprising that somebody would either mishear that or come up with a new phrase because it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. Like, it's raising cats and dogs or something.
It's raising cats, yeah. They're either turning into dried grapes or they're raising from the dead. Or they're hovering in the air.
Yes.
Or they're on an elevator.
There was a video, I think, of like, they took a cat to like one of those skydiving simulation places. Yeah. And they just put it out there, and it was, you know, kind of all spread eagle, and it like didn't know, it wasn't really afraid, it just didn't know what was going on, so it was just sitting there with this unsure look, but it was just sitting there floating in the air. It was so funny.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Well, with that, I think we've adequately covered our topics for today.
I think we have. Hopefully we didn't bore you guys too much. I think it got slow in the middle, but the malapropisms, I feel like we did a good job.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So, thanks for tuning in. Find us on Facebook. Find us on Anchor, Spotify. Give us a shout out. Give us topic ideas. Give us your feedback, thoughts, questions.
Death-defying stunts.
Snyder marks.
Ooh, I like those.
Money. Food.
Yeah, give us money. Well, I'm cool with that.
Yeah, we'll take pretty much anything except we don't want poo.
Hmm. You know somebody's going to put the poo emoji in the comments now.
I hope they do. Just, I don't want physical bags. That's okay.
What if they set it on fire and put it on
your front? Nope, still not acceptable.
Really?
I'll have to decline. All right. Catch us next time.
Yep.
Later.